Well, we've never seen anything like it. The March unemployment rate was near a record low of 3.1%. A month later, the rate was a record high, 13.6%, more than four times the rate for the previous month. The coronavirus pandemic has created huge disruptions in our economy and, of course, in the lives of people whose jobs have been impacted by the spring shutdowns. We'll hear today from agencies that are on the front lines of dealing with people in western Wisconsin who are economically vulnerable, and we'll get an update on the behavior of the virus itself in this area. That's our conversation this hour on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Joining us later in the hour are Nancy Rankus. She's the executive director of Feed My People Food Bank of Eau Claire, and Jessica Newman, community impact director of United Way St. Croix Valley, based in Hudson. For this first segment, though, we'll check in on what's happening with the coronavirus itself here in western Wisconsin with Brian Kaczmarski. He's the public health director in Polk County, and he chairs the 15-county Northwest Wisconsin Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition, which includes county public health organizations as well as emergency response organizations, hospitals, and clinics in our area. Brian Kaczmarski, thanks again for joining us today.
You bet. Happy to be here.
So let's start with some of those top-line numbers from the state we heard Hannah Haynes talking about in the newscast just prior to the program. Yesterday, the Department of Health Services reported 900 new cases in the state of Wisconsin, and that set an all-time high for the seven-day average to 817 newly reported cases per day. That number has been rising in the state since mid-June. So, Brian Kaczmarski, this is the fourth time we've had you on to talk about coronavirus reach into western Wisconsin since March. In those other conversations, we talked about the fact that about 90% of the cases in Wisconsin were concentrated in the southeastern half of the state. But that's changed, hasn't it?
It's definitely changed. I think all of the data that we're hearing out of statewide reports, for the most part, it is reflected in this part of the state. The majority of the counties in this region are considered high risk at this point, with the exception of Dunn and Rusk counties. So, unfortunately, we're seeing the trend go the wrong direction.
So let's run some numbers to get some more perspective on what's been happening with COVID-19 in western Wisconsin. On June 26th, the 16-county area of western Wisconsin covered by our radio stations had reported fewer than 800 cases total. That number has more than doubled to 1,594 in those 3 weeks. So is this the spike we'd been bracing for all along?
Well, it might be a little too early to tell in terms of the trend, but it certainly appears that way. And again, I don't see any indications of it slowing down.
In just this past week, Barron County's cases increased by 34%. Other counties in our region have seen growth between 15 to 25% in a week, including Buffalo, Pepin, Pierce, Rusk, and Trempealeau counties. Those more rural counties previously had low activity levels. You mentioned that most of them are now at high. All of them that we mentioned are now at high activity levels. So as a public health director, what is that telling you?
Well, to me, it's saying two things. Number one, I think it's safe to say we have wider and more active community transmission, and that's evidenced by our public health investigations that try to determine the root cause or index case, and it's becoming more difficult to do that. So we really don't know where people are getting infected, and that's concerning. The other piece to that I think is happening, I don't want to say just in the rural jurisdictions, but sheer volume alone, a lot of the resources and staff are getting to the point where we want to be able to follow up on these things in a timely manner. The earlier we identify the cases and the close contacts, the quicker we can get people isolated and quarantined, and that reduces the spread. And as we become overwhelmed with our resources, we're not getting to those cases in as timely a manner. And I think that is part of the contributing factor as well.
Ashland and Bayfield counties this week issued emergency advisories telling everyone age 5 and older to wear face coverings at all indoor public places beginning today. Barron County Public Health earlier this week changed its recommendations on mass gatherings to 25 or fewer people indoors 50 people outdoors. That's about half of what they had been. Are you aware of other counties in the region that are tightening guidelines due to the recent surge in cases?
Yeah, I know that that's starting to be resurfaced more and more. I want to say Eau Claire is looking at some tighter restrictions. I think everybody is starting to talk about those types of things again. And, you know, as we all know, there's two sides to the story, and it's, I think, the most efficient thing to do or the most practical thing to do is to kind of walk that fine line. We know that we need to get the economy moving. Nobody's denying that, but we need to be as safe as we can while we're doing it. So the local debate continues.
In Eau Claire County on Wednesday, business leaders, doctors, government officials held a joint meeting pleading with the public to wear masks. And we're seeing that the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce has been big in that movement, as a matter of fact. We're seeing stores like Walmart and Kohl's make decisions to require masks in the store. But it's a hard sell to get some folks to wear masks. So what's, as a public health director, what's your pitch to them to wear masks?
Well, I really think it goes down to it's individual accountability. And as a society, we all value our freedoms, our individual freedoms, our personal freedoms. But I think the biggest selling point is what about the people around you? And I think if we can get people to buy into that concept, you're going to get a higher, I think you're going to get a higher rate of compliance.
Julian Emerson wrote a piece in the online newspaper Up North News that detailed threats to some health directors in this part of the state, threats that they've faced for developing guidelines and orders in an effort to respond to the pandemic. Wondering if you've experienced that sort of tension or heard about it from your fellow public health officers in the region, and if you have a sense of the cause for that.
You know, it's accurate, whether it be direct threats, implied threats, or certainly pressure to not go down the road of guidance or orders for infringing on individual liberties and things like that. So it's a tough spot to be a health official in a pandemic because, you know, we're statutorily responsible for the health and safety of our citizens, but there's pressure on all sides to make what everybody perceives as the right decision.
There's a free drive-through testing event that's been announced for Monday at the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds in Chippewa Falls, operated by the National Guard. Now, we've had other testing events in the region, but this is the first one which is open to people without symptoms and without a doctor's referral. You can just show up. What's the significance of getting to the point where we're now testing people who are asymptomatic?
Well, I think what it really does is it gives us a truer indication of the prevalence in our communities. You know, we know that there are asymptomatic carriers of COVID-19, and having the ability to test asymptomatic people up until this point, and even in certain areas of the state and country, currently, they don't have the ability to do that because of lack of resources. But the example in Chippewa County, to me, is a really positive sign that, at least in that area, it would appear that their healthcare facilities are meeting the needs. They have the ability to test the symptomatic people, and this is that next step up on the goal of being able to test a broader portion of the population.
Now, the Northwest Wisconsin Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition. Readiness, an important part of the conversation, and when we've talked about this each time you've been on, but now that the cases are rising, do you, as you talk to your colleagues around the region, get a sense of the readiness? Are the hospitals in a position where they can manage this growth in coronavirus cases?
You know, I think it really is, I don't, sometimes facility-specific. Certainly county-specific. I'm aware of healthcare facilities that are communicating that they do have the supplies that they need, and then we're also hearing of shortages in areas. In terms of bed capacity, our region is, again, on paper, it looks like we're handling the need, but in our part of the state, a lot of our transfers go over to the Twin Cities area, and those percentages of beds and ICU beds and things like that, the real critical resources, they're getting close to capacity.
So with all this going on, we're halfway through summer vacation for schools, and parents, teachers, administrators are all wondering what's going to happen come September. Have districts been coming to you and your colleagues for advice on opening in the fall? And if so, what are you telling them?
Yeah, definitely. I've been fortunate to be a part of a really good group of superintendents in Polk County that truly have the safety of everyone as their top priority. So we've met three or four times in between meetings and back and forth phone calls and emails about looking at the guidance that's out there, looking at the trends and so on and so forth. And everybody agrees we want school back and running in the fall. We know it's best for everybody. But the how to do it safely is really the tricky part. What we've tried to do is look at the four or five what we consider the big areas. So things like transportation, things like what are we going to do to be as socially distanced as possible within the walls of that facility? There's only so much space. So we're looking at those things, at what the guidance is, and then saying, well, if we can't get to that, what can we do that gets us as close to that guidance as possible? And across the county, we're trying to come to consensus so that there's some consistency across the county, because we think that that's what the public is going to want. We don't want the notion or the perception of school A is doing it this way and school B is doing it that way, because then it gets into that why, that fairness piece, yeah. And we're trying to avoid that.
Well, while there's not yet consensus, it sounds like you're working toward that. Can you share some of the ideas that are out there as far as how school is going to look?
Yeah, I think conceptually schools have been told to really plan for three strategies, and that's everybody on site, it's everybody remote, and then it's some sort of a hybrid in between. So that's clearly part of the planning. Some of the other big ticket issues are passing time. So normally between classes, everybody's in the hallway, it's congested. What can we do to spread that out over a longer period of time and only let smaller cohorts pass to try to, again, minimize that cross traffic? Another example would be the transportation piece. If you look at the guidance in transportation, it's basically one student per seat, every other seat. And most of the school districts that I've talked to, it wouldn't happen with the fleet of buses that they have. They'd need more buses. They would need more routes. They would need more drivers. So we're looking at things like, could we do 50% capacity? Could we do 40% capacity? Can we incentivize our families to drop their kids off, thus lessening the amount of kids that need to be bused?
Some challenges for sure. Brian Kaczmarski, thanks for joining us again. We appreciate having you along and giving us an update.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
Brian Kaczmarski is chair of the Northwest Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition, Northwest Wisconsin Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition, and he's the public health officer for Polk County. So after the break, we explore some of the economic costs of the pandemic, particularly as it has impacted the most economically needy individuals in western Wisconsin. Are you among the thousands who lost employment due to the pandemic? How are you making your life work right now? Are you taking advantage of food pantries or other services available? Love to hear from you, hear your stories, hear your questions for our guests. Call 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or email ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you're tuned to the West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back now on the West Side, and we spend the rest of this hour talking about the personal economic impacts the pandemic has had on residents in western Wisconsin. Today's guests both work in nonprofit groups whose missions are to help those in need. Jessica Newman is the Community Impact Director for United Way St. Croix Valley, which serves Pierce, St. Croix, Polk, Burnett, and Washburn counties in the areas of financial stability, education, and health, and she joins us now from her home, Jessica Newman. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today, Dean. I appreciate it.
Good to have you along. Nancy Rankus is the executive director of Feed My People Food Bank, which is based in Eau Claire, and provides food to more than 200 hunger relief programs in its 14-county western Wisconsin service area. She is in her third month in that role, coming to western Wisconsin after years as president of the Riverbend Food Bank in the Quad Cities. Nancy Rankus, welcome to western Wisconsin, and welcome to the West Side.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to share a little more about our mission today.
So, Nancy Rankus, you started your position at Feed My People in May, 2 months into the pandemic. That must have been an interesting onboarding experience.
The interview process was primarily done by Zoom, but I did have the opportunity to come up for one day and get to meet the team here, meet the community, and have an opportunity to speak with Emily Moore, the previous long-term executive director here. So I've said I'd like to write a column someday about the experience. It's very unusual to interview and move during a pandemic.
Yeah, there have been a lot of folks talking about, you know, collecting stories for this, and they will be interesting stories, but I don't think we want to hear them all right now, that's for sure. Hey, I'm curious, though, what attracted you to the position in Eau Claire?
I joined the food banking world about 5 years ago, had been a nonprofit for quite some time, primarily on the fundraising side, went to Riverbend Food Bank and had the opportunity to really embrace and experience the great work that we're doing and the difference that we were making in people's lives. Food, shelter, clothing, people need to know that they have that every day or have access to it, or it creates a huge stress on individuals in our communities. So once I started in food banking, I knew that was where I wanted to spend the rest of my career. The opportunity to come to Eau Claire and become a part of an amazing team that was already doing great work and help us grow and feed more people and continue on the mission of closing the meal gap in the counties we serve was just a great opportunity. Personally, my husband and I have 3 children who live in northern Wisconsin and 8 grandchildren, so it's not quite a midway point between our kids and grandkids in Davenport and up in Eagle River, but it's pretty close.
All right. Jessica Newman, United Way St. Croix Valley has as its vision statement, all people in the St. Croix Valley will lead a healthy life, receive quality education, and experience financial stability. Explain, if you will, how that vision normally manifests itself and before the pandemic. I mean, how does that normally look in the life of United Way St. Croix Valley?
Yeah, I think that our mission puts itself really at helping people with their basic needs. We help to support 25 food pantries and shelters in Pierce, St. Croix, and Polk counties on a monthly basis, providing them with fresh fruits and vegetables, proteins, eggs, meat, giving them access to some of the more costly items that our smaller rural pantries would have trouble getting access to or would strain their budgets. And so on a monthly basis, we've done that for over 13 years out of Hudson at our John Coughlin Food and Resource Center that acts as a hub. When the pandemic came, we actually had been in the process of trying to meet other needs and getting to programs or getting to communities where they didn't have food shelves. We had started mobile pantries within the last year. When we saw the pandemic hit, we saw an influx of food, and our food hub was able to help source that and bring it to our area and then able to distribute it out to our food pantries. So really the foundation that we had laid in the valley when it came to food really was ready for this pandemic to help support that piece of it, to really help streamline whether it's fresh fruits and vegetables or food coming through the Emergency Food Assistance Program or TFAP. We're ready and able to do that. We've added some other mobile pantries to our service areas as we look at meeting the need for more people. And, you know, our rural pantries do an excellent job, but sometimes they don't have the hours that fit with a work schedule. And so we're able to meet that with some of our mobile supports in partnership with our ADRC, the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, as well as other community partners. So our food piece really ramped up in that space. Other programming programming that we pay attention to is, or that we focus on, is mental health. That was put on a little bit of a pause. We've been championing mental health first aid, which is like first aid that any of us would take, except it really addresses and gives us the skills to how to intervene or recognize a mental health crisis or signs and symptoms early and how to have those conversations. I've heard from lots of folks that had previously been trained with mental health first aid and how that helped them through this time or helped others. And we are actually in the process of making that. It's part of a national certification. Our local instructors are becoming certified for the virtual teaching, and we hope to get those back online soon. And then finally, two other programs that we have are Success by Six, which is where we focus on our communities, our smallest community members, making sure they have what they need by the age of six, socially, emotionally, physically, and mentally, to be ready for school. That program took a real turn during the pandemic. While we previously were doing face-to-face meetings and helping support our community, helping to support programming, that took a shift, and we provided emergency food bags to families that were in need, as well as toys and games and books and activities that would provide some really good interaction between parents and children during a stressed time to help relieve that tension or give them something else to do besides what they already had in their house, right, that can get boring after 16 weeks or so. So that, and then we had just put up a 211 call center in Hudson, Wisconsin last August. We opened up, and that became critical during the early onset of the pandemic and continues to remain that way, where we're here to provide information about anything having to do with the pandemic, whether it's testing sites or what are symptoms or what you should do if you may have been exposed, in addition to making sure that people can connect with our local resources. As Nancy said, if you don't have those basic needs, it causes a tremendous amount of stress. 211 is there to help connect folks, to help alleviate those stresses.
Nancy Rinkus, how have the service goals of Feed My People or the way you implement them changed in response to COVID-19?
They've changed dramatically. Our model has that we've been asking our pantries to do, that we've been doing with our own programming, has been set up the food inside of a building where people come in and people can come in and select the food that they know their family would eat and that they need. And we've had to, with COVID, we've had to go to a trunk distribution where our guests pull up, pop their trunk, and we put the food that we have available into their trunk. So that's really one significant change, and we had to do that for the safety of our guests, the safety of our volunteers, and, of course, our team. So that's one big thing. The other thing that's really shifted is our desire to reach out to people who never have found themselves in this situation before. We got a post on our Facebook page just a couple of days ago from a woman who said, "I'm sitting in my car. I've just been to one of your distributions. I never thought we would be in this position. My husband lost his job. I think we're going to lose our house. I'm worried we're not even going to be able to keep our car." And thanking us for being there for them to get food, again, to take away that one worry. So I think our big things are safety, continuing to distribute, but also reaching people who maybe have never needed our services before and letting them know it's okay. Please come to one of our distributions. They're all on our website, or call our office, because it's one burden we want to take off of you during these difficult times.
That's the voice of Nancy Rinkus. She's the executive director of Feed My People Food Bank based in Eau Claire, but serving 14 counties in western Wisconsin. Also with us on the program, Jessica Newman. She's the community impact director of United Way St. Croix Valley. The number to call, 800-228-5615. If you have questions for our guests or would like to share your story about how you've been impacted by the economic downturn, and perhaps if you've availed yourself to some of the services offered by these organizations or similar organizations in western Wisconsin. 800-228-5615 is that number, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. The unemployment rate in Wisconsin has hovered in the teens since April due to business closures and layoffs. Nancy Rinkus, how has that affected the demand for services at Feed My People?
We know that an average of about 10% of people in the 14 counties we serve were food insecure prior to COVID. We have that data. And so we were obviously working very quick, as fast as we can, to close that meal gap and get access to food for all those people. Since COVID has hit, depending on the month, we saw a huge spike in the month of March when things really went bad. And then it sort of leveled off a little bit, where right now through the end of June, we're running at about a 20% increase in need. I will tell you that our pantries that we work with have stepped up and are continuing to distribute safely, and we're so grateful for that, as well as we have increased our distributions, our we call them pop-ups, meaning we go into a parking lot, we bring food, and our guests can line up and come through the line and get food. We've increased those substantially. As a matter of fact, last Friday at our Eau Claire pantry and our Chippewa Falls pantry, we served over 425 families. And that Chippewa Falls pantry is happening every Friday morning, and that's a brand-new pantry. So we're trying to get out into all 14 counties because we know the need is increasing. We're being told to anticipate a greater surge if things like the additional unemployment benefit goes away at the end of July. So we're really planning that that 20% increase could actually grow substantially, and putting plans in place to prepare to continue to serve the greater need.
We saw unemployment rates move from near record lows in March to record highs in April, and that's a head-spinning rate of change. Jessica Newman, what specific challenges did that present for United Way St. Croix Valley and its mission to build relationships, connect resources, and unite communities in your region?
You know, it presented challenges, but it also presented an incredible amount of opportunity, Dean. We had cities that came together through all sectors, whether it be faith communities, business communities, chambers, and hospitals, county health, coming together to say, what are the problems that we're facing on a week-by-week basis, and how can we come back and support those needs? Some of them resulted in finding volunteer networks. Up in Burnett and Barron County, they have the We Are Network that they set up a site during the height of the pandemic where folks could volunteer to bring groceries and medicines and other items that required running out of your house for those that weren't able to supplement that need. Additionally, a network like that was set up in Hudson, Wisconsin. So we worked with organizations to help put together groups that could service that need, whether it's a group that could manage the tech end and another group that could provide the volunteer end. We helped to bring those groups together. Additionally, we worked with our nonprofits that we help not only financially through grants, but also through our programming, and asked them what their needs were, how could we help them continue their work, or what challenges were they facing. So we worked with the St. Croix Valley Foundation as well as United Way Washington County East and helped to do some emergency granting of over $500,000 to go out to organizations to face those costs that came with those increases that Nancy talked about. So we were able to put some great financial resources out into the community early on. We are evaluating the impact of those dollars as well as the continued growth in need in our communities and hope to do another cycle of granting with those organizations later this summer or early fall based on what those needs are. Additionally, we're responding, as we said, with our food and with our 211. So it put a strain on our staff, as it did with all organizations. We did see great community support from a financial perspective. We have a 24-hour giving day that we run every year called Give Big St. Croix Valley with nearly 100 nonprofits that participate. And this year we set a record of raising over $404,000 in 24 hours on April 28th. So I think that the opportunities early on were fantastic as our nonprofits, and we look forward. We're looking forward not only for the next 3 and 6 months of surges that we're planning for, but the next 18 to 24 months financially of how our organization's going to work to be sustainable during this time when other forms of fundraising have been unable to happen.
We're talking about the economic impact on individuals of the pandemic here in Western Wisconsin. Jessica Newman is the Community Impact Director of United Way St. Croix Valley. Nancy Rinkus is Executive Director of Feed My People Food Bank. Private businesses of all sizes have had to change how they operate. Some have closed temporarily, some closed for good. Jessica Newman, how are your nonprofit partners weathering these operational changes? What are you hearing from them?
Right. We work with several food pantries, as we shared, and they did many of the similar changes that Nancy talked about earlier, where you're moving to a curbside or trunk service model. Our organizations that provide services directly to individuals and their families have moved to a virtual model where instead of having mommy and me play dates in person, they're having them virtually as much as possible. It does create a challenge for those that may not have access to those resources, whether it's not having internet at their home or not having devices that work that way. So our communities are coming together to look at that and the populations that those impact. Specifically our elder population, as well as those that are financially challenged that may not have access or understanding of those technologies. How can we help make those connections? The isolation that has come along with this pandemic has caused a huge mental health toll, not only on those that had to stay home, but those that want to go see their loved ones too. So we're working on how can we navigate those pieces. And our nonprofits are being really creative in how they're solving those solutions or coming up with those solutions.
So how has your community been hit by the economic downturn and the high unemployment rate due to the pandemic? Are you hopeful or nervous about the months to come? Let us know what you think. Ask your question via email at ideas@wpr.org, or give us a call and join the conversation at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back talking about the economic downturn and its effect on individuals and families in western Wisconsin with Nancy Rinkus, the executive director of Feed My People Food Bank of Eau Claire, and Jessica Newman, the community impact director of United Way St. Croix Valley of Hudson. Again, invite you to join us for the conversation, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or via email at ideas@wpr.org. Nancy Rinkus, the United Nations recently released its annual The State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World report. In it, the UN estimates that up to 132 million more people worldwide may face food insecurity because of the coronavirus. Help us, if you will, to zoom to our part of the world. What is food security outlook right now for Western Wisconsin?
There was a study that was done. It's called the McKinsey study that was done probably in early March. And we had the opportunity to obtain results for the counties that we serve. And they did a direct tie to what was happening, what they were projecting to happen with the unemployment rate, and how it would translate to food insecurity in our communities. And from that, we were given a projection of what that number might look like, and it is a substantial increase for us. We could see upwards to another 500,000 pounds of food needing to be distributed every month in the communities that we serve. And so that is really what we're putting contingency plans in place for, that if that surge, as they call it, does happen, we know by county what that could look like and have strategies in place to serve those people in those communities. And as I alluded to earlier, the biggest concern we have is making sure that people who've never been food insecure before know that they can come and get food from our pantries or from one of our direct distributions. And so that's another piece of our strategy if the surge does happen, that they know where they can get food.
Children often rely on schools to provide meals for them during the school year and through summer programs. Nancy Rinkus, with no in-person school and limited or no summer programs, what are the options these families have to get the food they need?
So we sort of have three different strategies that we're working on simultaneously, depending on what school districts decide. We're in 30 schools with our weekend kids meal programs. Those are meals that we pack here, volunteers pack at the food bank. We take them to the schools, and then kiddos can put them in their backpacks and take them home. As you said, if kids are not going to school every day, we have to figure out a new way to make sure we're reaching all of the kids, not just the ones who happen to be in school on Fridays when we're distributing. We typically would distribute weekend kids meals. So we're looking at a variety of options. We have school pantries. We like school pantries inside the school because then we can feed the whole family and not just the child. But again, if there's not access to the building, we have to have a different way. So our plan is to focus on feeding the entire family rather than just the kids if the kids are not back in school. And we'll do that through a variety of strategies, including our pop-up pantries and possibly working with local school districts to do drop-off distribution, set up pop-ups in their parking lots if that's what we need to do. Once we know what the schools are going to do, we'll implement the appropriate strategy for that school district, because some of them are going to, they're all going to do different things.
800-228-5615, your number if you'd like to join the conversation today, 800-228-5615. Jessica Newman, you mentioned earlier the Success by Six initiative of the United Way St. Croix Valley. Early childhood development is part of your organization's mission. How is that moving forward now when going to school and other recreational and educational programs really isn't an option?
We have partnered with the Child Protective Services programs in our counties to reach those that are most in need. When people hear Child Protective Services, we always think of the worst cases, but they're there to really support families in so many types of need, even before those worst case scenarios. And so we've worked with them to make sure that those families don't have the stress of food by delivering those free meals, those free emergency bags. And so there's some great stories that came out of that. Not only is it a drive-up format, but the kids who are used to seeing these the service providers on a weekly basis and have really become trusted adults for these kids and the parents were thrilled to see them when they were doing the distribution of these meals, kids waving from the back of the car, so excited to see these trusted adults in their lives as well as the parents, because it's a little bit of relief that's provided. So we were thrilled to be able to facilitate an interaction that was not only there to provide some basic needs, but also help from a mental health piece. We're also working with our counties to make sure that their staff has what they need as they gear up to figure out what the next few months look like. Can they go back to in-person visits? What is that? Do they need sanitary precautions? Do they need masks? Do they need gloves? Do the families need these items? We're working on how do we help out in those areas. Additionally, we continue to work with those providers to make sure that our home visitors have the educational background, and that's really where we have found our niche. We have Betsy Biker, who is a renowned child or home health visitor in our area. She's certified in infant mental health and just has a great passion for mental health of an entire family, and we know that that impacts our kids so much. So she's really working hand-in-hand with the organizations that are on the front lines to make sure they have what they need.
We've shared a lot of numbers in this program, and we do that often as we talk about this pandemic, but those in-person connections and those, you know, face-to-face, even if they're not physically in the same room, connections really are something that I think a lot of people are missing and really appreciate more when it's harder for them to come by, as you mentioned, with the kids waving from the back of the car. As I mentioned earlier in the program, we're halfway through summer, and schools in western Wisconsin are still trying to figure out how to open in the fall. We heard Brian Kaczmarski talk about the work he, as public health director in Polk County, is doing with the schools in his region. Wondering if United Way St. Croix Valley is doing anything particular to prepare for the various contingencies schools are facing in the fall.
Absolutely. You know, over the summer, what we've been able to do is we've provided what's called a sunny summer produce pack. So out of the counties that we serve, schools that have opted in are receiving boxes of fresh produce for families in their community on a weekly basis, and that will continue through the summer. We also help to support our backpack programs, similar to the weekend meal programs that Nancy talked about. A lot of these are homegrown and come out of each school district, but we work with them to make sure they have access to the food that they need to put in those backpacks, that they can do it in an efficient and cost-effective model, and also make sure that they have access to healthy fruits and vegetables, meats, things of that nature. We're also trying to meet communities that, as Nancy said, have never used our food shelves before. What we're finding in some of our counties is part of this has to do with equity. So last week, we went and met workers that are at a food plant in New Richmond and made sure that they were able to receive food. Going to a food pantry can be very intimidating. asking for help can be really hard. And so we're working hard to help our community nonprofits, as well as provide opportunities where there are not some, to meet people where they're at and make sure that they have access to those needs. Additionally, we're here for folks 24 hours a day through our 211 program, where anyone can call and ask for any type of support, whether it's rent assistance, food, mental health supports, and we connect them with the services that they need.
Nancy Rankus, I know in the past Feed My People has noted the difficulty in helping those so-called hidden populations, people that you don't know about that are in need. Talk about what's meant by hidden populations and what are resources you can recommend to help those people.
I think there are food deserts throughout the 14 counties that we serve, you know, places where the grocery store has either gone out of business or there is not one within walking distance or on the bus route. And those are the people we worry about the most. We also worry about our seniors. We know that food insecurity disproportionately affects our kids and our seniors. And so what we try to do is really make sure that we're reaching out into those communities. We have team members who are reaching out to, whether it's a senior living facility, do your people who live there have enough food, things like that. And there are cases where we are doing food box drops at those facilities. If there is a community that is in a food desert, we are going into those neighborhoods and asking for volunteers to help us deliver to people's doors. We are doing that, which is something we had not been doing in the past. We're not going inside the home, but we are letting them know we're coming and asking if they want a box and putting it at their door. So in addition to that, on social media, we are really trying to get our message out there to people who maybe are in categories of employment where we know they've been laid off, food servers, bartenders, waiters, waitresses, any of the categories where we know across the country they've been suffering because those businesses are shut down. And we have a process where we're reaching out to those types of individuals to say, we're here for you, and come and get food from us.
Both of your organizations serve multi-county areas in western Wisconsin. Jessica Newman, I'm wondering how much of a challenge does the largely rural nature of your service area impact the programs and the help that United Way St. Croix Valley and its partner organizations provide, both normally, but also in the midst of this pandemic?
Right. We cover a large span of western Wisconsin in a five-county area, and it does, we see the disparity of services when we look at services that are in St. Croix County versus those that are in Pierce, Polk, Burnett, and Washburn County, it's very different. And so what we are doing is working to fill the gap in those communities, working with those nonprofits to make sure that there are resources. Some of those grants that we talked about earlier went specifically to those rural areas, knowing that we often are a space that's missed because we lay just between just across the river from Minnesota, so a lot of grants don't come from that direction, and also just far enough from western or eastern Wisconsin that grants don't fall our way either. So we're working really hard to try and make sure that they have the financial resources that they need and getting creative about what those solutions are for individuals and working really with nonprofits to make sure that referrals are going the right direction. People don't need to call multiple places but are able to call one or two places and get the resources that they need.
Nancy Rankus, Feed My People Food Bank relies largely on volunteers to help carry out the work. How has the pandemic changed the interaction between Feed My People and its volunteers?
It has definitely changed it. We could not do the work that we do without the tremendous amount of volunteers that we have. So we have are very blessed that we're still able to have volunteers in our building, although it looks different. I think, are one of very few nonprofits that have the ability to do that. And so we still have volunteers in every day, packing food boxes for us, volunteering at our pop-up distributions. We obviously are practicing all the CDC-recommended safety processes. We do have a contingency plan in place that if we were not able to have volunteers coming into our building, how we would continue to serve, because that's what we have to do. We're hopeful to never have to use that, but right now we are encouraging people to volunteer to call us first before they come over because we're very limited on how many we can have in the building. But again, that's what's allowing us to serve this additional 20% need that we're already seeing, not to mention what might be coming by the end of the summer.
Jessica Newman, are you concerned about the effects of the coronavirus pandemic in your region, that the effects will lead to greater need than United Way St. Croix Valley and its partners have capacity to meet?
I think that that's something we work at every single day, even prior to the pandemic. There are the organizations are working to get creative. We work across lines to make sure that individuals have their needs met. And if one organization cannot, we do lots of referrals between them. That's always a concern for us. Financial support is always needed for our nonprofits, especially as we look forward to some of those that were traditionally giving through our campaigns and now are laid off. We are seeing challenges there, not only for us, but for other nonprofits. And so we want to make sure that we encourage those that have the ability to give to do so, whether it's of their time, talents, or treasures. All of that comes together to make our nonprofits work in our communities. And so we continue to do the best every day. And as I said, we are planning for not just 3 and 6 months out, but how do we stay viable and support with the vital needs over the next 18 to 24 months and well beyond into the future.
Has it affected your granting schedule at all?
We have changed some things with our granting, but we do continue to grant out to organizations. So it has changed in the how we pay out. Instead of doing lump sums, we're doing it over the course of a year, but also making sure that we're helping organizations where they need it. In fact, our grants were due in January, and as the pandemic hit, we went back to those that asked for grant requests in January and said, how has this changed for you? Realizing that a grant request that was submitted in January may have greatly changed. So we are working in tandem with our nonprofits to make sure that we're addressing the current needs of today.
Nancy Rankus, what are your thoughts on the long-term effects of the pandemic on the 14 counties of western Wisconsin that are served by Feed My People?
I think it's going to get, the need is going to get more dire before it gets better. And I also think the way we distribute food is probably going to look different for much longer than what we all thought when we first started. I think we all thought we're going to do this trunk distribution probably for a month or so, and things will go back to normal, and now we're all finding that's not true. So I think long-term, I think it's going to the food insecurity rate is going to increase beyond what we're seeing right now. And as I said earlier, prior to COVID, we already had an average of about 10% of the people in the counties we serve that were still food insecure that we were trying to help. Add the pandemic to it. Add if the virus does continue to spread, I think we're in for at least the end of the year, if not into next year, continuing to do trunk distribution, continuing to see food donations. The food supply decrease, causing us to, we've purchased about 21% more food than we did a year ago at this time, as of the end of June, and I think that's going to continue as well.
Nancy Rankus, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Western Wisconsin once again.
Thank you.
And Jessica Newman, who took some time from her vacation to be with us this morning, appreciate you being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks also to Polk County Public Health Officer Brian Kaczmarski, Chair of the Northwest Wisconsin Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition, who joined us earlier. Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Kate Spranger provides publicity and archives. Next week, join us for a 10th Senate District debate between the Republican candidates in the August 11th primary. And thank you for making us part of your day. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.